This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. Terry Savage, the guest on Wednesdays today, wrote in her online column, terrysavage.com, the markets can't seem to make up their mind about whether the greatest threat is inflation or recession. Boy, isn't that it in a nutshell, Terry? Well put.
Yeah, well, I wrote that a couple of days ago, actually, and it'll be out in syndication, but I want to post it immediately. Yeah, this is a really interesting moment in time. We have all this headline news about inflation, 9.1%, and the fear that the Fed, this will give the Fed cover. They'll have to raise rates not only 75 basis points this time, but again in September. That could throw the economy into a recession that will hurt stocks. So, oh, bad news for stocks. On the other hand, there are those who say, wait, this is basically old news. These are the June numbers. We've already seen interest rates come down despite plans for the Fed to raise rates, but interest rates in the 10-year Treasury have come down, bringing mortgage rates down a bit. Gasoline prices have come down a bit. Copper, lumber, a bunch of commodity futures have come down a bit. And so people are saying, this was it. This marked the peak print meaning the peak number of inflation, and for sure these are old numbers, and inflation's already on the way down, so don't worry about it. And the stock market, just today, the futures were up. I was watching closely, over 100 points when this announcement came out at 7:30 Chicago time. Within like nanoseconds, they were down 200, down 300 during the morning, and now I'm looking at the Dow. I mean, Dow's only down 44 points. So the market can't make up its mind. So don't you try and get in the way.
You also said don't think you're going to find a money manager that's going to
beat it. You know what?
Or a segment, for that matter.
Exactly. Or a sector, because that's surely the way to get whipsawed. In fact, do you have a minute before to make this point?
I do.
Okay, there's a wonderful guy who writes a great newsletter, two guys, Dan Weiner and Jeff DeMeo, who writes something called the Vanguard Independent Advisor Newsletter. There's a link in this column, top column. And they went back and said, you know, everybody's opening their statements, a column I wrote a week ago, showing, oh, what a horrible result for the first 6 months of the year, because a conservative portfolio has always been 60% stocks, 40% bonds. How could you get in trouble? Well, as we've talked, this year, both stocks went down, as we know, and bonds, which prices go down when rates go up, bonds also lost money. So this was the 60-40 option was down 17% this year. So even people trying to be conservative lost money. But should you now switch? Should you do something different? And listen carefully, I'm going to give you some numbers.
Okay.
They looked at all those 60-40 portfolio, balanced portfolio results going back to 1945. On average, that 60-40 balanced portfolio, they looked for all the times that there were losses, okay? On average, this balanced portfolio gained 10% over the next 6 months. Anytime there was a 10% greater decline in that 60-40, there were 15 times that happened going back to 1945. On average, over the next 6 months, that 60-40 portfolio gained 10%. It was negative only once after being down 10% for 6 months. And if you looked at the next 12-month period, the 60-40 portfolio was higher every single time, with an average return of 18.4%. Now, that didn't get you back to even if you'd already lost a lot in the first 6 months. But the point is, don't switch ships midstream, because you could just be compounding the losses that you've already have in your account you haven't taken.
I wish I had heard that sooner. I put all of my money in Beanie Babies, which I thought was a good investment.
Was that 25 years ago?
No, it was yesterday, and I don't think
that was... Was it Cabbage Patch Dolls?
Yes, those two.
Tulip Bulbs?
All right, so hold on. Yeah, really, really.
Or maybe it was Bitcoin.
So Terry Savage will take some calls, and we'll read some texts, and she's got a few other things to say as well.
Okay, let's go back to the stock market. By the way, in 1968, let me just think about this. I know this for a fact.
Yeah.
The Dow just was around 1,000. So how about that?
1968, the Dow was at 1,000.
It was, I think, I'm trying to remember, the first time it hit 1,000. I think it hit 1,000 in 1968, fell in 1969 and 70, went over 1,000 again in 71, and closed at a low of 570.01. I was there.
You know,
in 1973.
If I may, when I think about, okay, where were we then and where are we now? I don't go back to 68. I think a lot of us have benchmarks like 1,000 or 10,000 when the Dow crossed 10,000, or maybe when you retired or got your first job. The one that I kind of pay attention to is, where were we on the Dow the day Donald Trump got elected? And I think about that not in all in political terms, but just as kind of a benchmark for where we've been over the last 5 or 6 years, particularly since that night the market futures dropped 600 points. And you thought,
but
this
then
is
the market rallied the next day.
I know that well.
It was amazing.
And so when you just draw your horizon to 5 years, the ups and downs being what they are, we're still on the play. So I guess here's the reason I do that. If you'd said to me that night, where will you be 5 years from now? And you say, I'll get you to 31,000. I would have said, I'll take that. And you may not feel that right now because you were close to 40. But I guess, I don't know if that's a valuable tool or not, but depending on how far back you look, things aren't sometimes as bad as they feel.
Exactly. Or think about this. All the bear markets we've had, including a bunch that have shaved 50% off the market, 73, 74, 2001, 2007, 2008, all of those bear markets, the peaks before them, we've exceeded, in most cases, doubled or tripled. So that's why it's so bad to have a short-term perspective, because it's painful in the short term, but looking back and having made a mistake of getting out is worse.
Please ask Terry Savage, if I close a credit card account, will that affect my credit? I've got really good credit now. I just want to get rid of one of my cards.
As long as it's not your oldest and longest-term credit card, that you should keep. Even unless it costs you a lot now, unless they've raised the annual fee. But if you have very good credit, closing an old card that you haven't used will not have much impact. If you have too many cards, that could be worse. But closing a credit card, the thing you want to make sure of is that you demonstrate longevity in your credit card. But I closed an old one out a little while back. I'm not concerned too much about a few points on my credit score because I'm not going to be applying for credit now. The other thing is, we want to do that at a time when you're not just about to apply for a car loan.
By the way, Pete just whispered in my ear, so November 9th, the day after the election, 2016, Donald Trump is not president yet, but he is the president in waiting. November 9th, 2016, the Dow was at 18,589. Am I right on that, Pete? 18,586. All right, call me a liar for 3
Okay.
Points.
But you know what we had? I mean, forgetting the whole...
Oh, and it was up 256 points that day, and it was up for the day. How about that?
But at night, what was really interesting is I was out to dinner, and in fact, Jim Thompson, former deceased governor Jim Thompson, was at the same restaurant, and I saw him walking out, and he said, take a look at the markets, Terry. And I went, wow, something's happened. I didn't know that Trump would win. And the markets were going negative, and then they turned around and rebounded that next day.
This is Colleen. You're on WGN with Terry Savage. Colleen, what can we do for you?
Hi, Terry and John. So, Terry, I have a 15-year-old granddaughter who started a job about 9 months ago. We opened a checking account, savings account. In that amount of time, she probably has about $1,200 saved. So I need to know what is the best way for her to invest it, or, you know, IRA. I don't know what she could do with it.
So here's the big question. Is that family going to apply for financial aid, needs-based financial aid for college?
Most likely.
Yeah, so money in a child's name in a custodial account, the checking account can't be in her name. She's a minor. It's probably the parent's name, custodian for little Susie, who's doing a great job of savings.
Yeah, it's in my name and her name. We had a deal that she had to put half of her paycheck into the savings account. So it's my name and her name.
Okay, so what you might want to do is do a Roth IRA with your name as custodian. they're going to change the rules about grandparent assets pretty soon. But basically, you might want to go to a place like Stockpile, open a Roth IRA, agree to match what she puts in. That'll kind of keep it out of her name. It won't be counted as a heavily weighted asset in the financial aid formula. And she can pick stocks or ETFs and have a little bit of experience in investing. Stockpile.com lets you do that, and they let you open an IRA for her, and she doesn't need a tax deduction, so make it a Roth IRA.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Good question. Question for Terry Savage. I've got a home equity loan with a balance of $30,000. I pay $450 a month towards that. I pay the interest amount with the balance of the $450 going towards the principal. Is that an appropriate way to pay off the balance?
Well, first of all, you want to pay the principal down as quickly as possible. A lot depends on the interest rate. Is that they typically have a floating rate, and that interest rate is probably going up. But all I can say to you is the more you pay, the better. At least pay the required monthly payment and then add the balance to principal, because that's a way to pay down the loan fastest, because there's less principal on which the interest accrues.
Is it, the calculation, I guess, Terry, would be right. What is the rate they're charging versus what is the rate you could get with that money? And if you can pay more money to the balance of any loan, you might as well pay that down if the loan is at a higher rate, right?
Well, absolutely. The key principle here is what will the lender accommodate in terms of accepting additional payments. So what you want to do is make the required payment for that month. If it's like, what was that, $400?
Yeah, $450.
And then say an additional $400 or whatever it is should go toward the principal. And then at the end of the year, you should check to make sure that those additional credits, and if you can do the same thing every month, it's less complicated for them. Make sure they have credited your additional payments toward the principal.
That's Terry Savage. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. TerrySavage.com, the syndicated financial columnist, our Wednesday guest on the Wintrust Business Lunch. What's up, Terry?
Okay, well, I hope Colleen, who called in before with a 15-year-old granddaughter, is still out there. During the break, I went to Stockpile. I thought, do I remember they have IRA accounts? They do not, but there is a bigger headline news for Stockpile, which has been for years one of my favorite websites, the favorite to get kids started investing. Starting in 2 days, July 15th, Stockpile is transitioning. It's always been free and will continue to be free, commission-free purchases of stocks, but they're going to transition to a $4.95 a month membership fee, unless for existing members, which gives you about 48 hours to be an existing member, there's a one-time lifetime fee of $19.95. So starting July 15th, $19.95 gives you one adult account and up to five kids investing accounts for minors. So if you're going to open a Stockpile account, you were thinking of doing that for your grandchild, go to stockpile.com and you will pay $19.95 for all the accounts you open up, even if you don't put money in them right away, for your grandchildren. And by the way, when they get to be 18 or 21, the age of majority, they'll have a free lifetime membership, assuming we're all still around at that point.
Yeah.
But Stockpile has got a revenue model now. They've been such a great place to buy stocks. I don't know how they were able to support themselves with all they gave away. And otherwise, you'll be paying $4.95. And a minor account with a grandparent is not filed currently under the FAFSA rules under a child's asset. So it didn't have to be a Roth IRA in there in a low tax bracket. So I would still suggest Colleen open a custodial account for her minor grandchild and do it immediately. Pay the $19.95 once and then no more commissions ever.
Back to your calls, 312-981-7200. Mark's got a question for Terry Savage. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Hi, Terry.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I had to get out of the market in December. I had a health problem, and I made out a will and a trust, and these people don't know anything about the market, so I moved everything into a federal money market. So I've been out of the market through this whole thing, and I'm trying to figure out how to get back in. I hear people talking about dollar cost averaging and waiting until the Fed finishes their increasing in maybe October before the election and then go back in. But I'm just not sure, timing-wise, how to do it and at what rate.
Well, first of all, just, you know, what do they say? Even a blind pig finds a truffle once in a while. Your timing couldn't have been better because the market peaked in December.
I wish I needed a different cause.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, I'm sorry about that. Second of all, was that money inside a retirement account or not?
Half and half.
Okay. Did you leave the money inside the retirement account, or did you take it out and pay taxes on it?
No. I left it. Both halves were in the market, but I moved them into the federal money market. But it's still in the IRA. I didn't take it out of the IRA.
Good for you. Okay. So, and could I ask on the air, how old are you?
72.
Okay. Well, very interesting. Your time horizon is a little shorter than most people because starting this year, you'll have to take required minimum distributions out of your IRA.
Right.
So you're asking me, when is the exact bottom of the market going to come?
I'm not asking you that.
Okay.
I'm asking you what the definition of dollar cost averaging
is.
The
definition is merely
that's how you try to sidestep trying to time the bottom.
Exactly. The dollar cost averaging is what you did when you put money in. You put that couple hundred dollars in or $1,000 in every month on a regular basis from your paycheck or an automatic deduction, and you bought stocks on the third of every month. That was what it was set up, and you didn't care what the market was doing. So basically, you never picked the bottom and you never picked the top. You just happened to pick the top to get out. Your big question now is something different, Mark. It's how much of this money, whatever the X dollars that you have in cash, can you afford to put at risk? I'm going to tell you something. There are a lot of issues. Fortunately, you made a new estate plan. I think this is a moment when you talk to someone who's not trying to sell you something, who will work out a retirement living plan for you, how much money you need to spend. I'm not saying leave it all in cash because it's getting eaten away at 9%. My cash is, my chicken money is too. But on the other hand, we don't know whether the market's going to go up or down. And your time horizon is maximum 20-something years. So you don't want to be all locked up in stocks. You might want to take half of the money in your IRA and start dollar cost averaging in by putting a little bit in every month. But I'd rather see you get an overall perspective on what your living expenses will be, what your Social Security will be, what your other benefits are. And you need a fee-only fiduciary financial advisor. And for that, you need to go to wealthramp.com. I get nothing out of this. It's a service of carefully vetted, fee-only fiduciary advisors that you get matched with. Try that first before you make this timing decision on your own.
How much money are we talking about, Mark?
Just under $3
million. Whoa. Mark, are you married?
No.
Oh, well, Mark, maybe I should come. No.
Give me your number.
Yeah, be careful, Terry. Here's what has to be you put $1.5 million on the side, and then over the next 24 months, you put in 1/24 each month, and that's dollar cost average back in.
Well, I never knew there was that much money involved because that's probably an okay strategy. But then comes the question, you made an estate plan, and who's this money going to? If you're not married, you have children, maybe grandchildren from a previous life. So part of this is an estate planning decision. Part of this is an overall financial planning decision. The simple thing is to do just what you said, John. Leave $1.5 million in T-bills and start at a small amount, maybe $50,000 a month over the next 24 months. And put the rest in. But that's a formula that doesn't take into account how you want to live your life.
Yeah.
I think, Mark, you're going to have money left over unless you get married.
Mark, good luck to you. Thanks for the phone call. We're going to go from Mark to Frank. Frank, you're on WGN with Terry Savage.
Hi, Terry. Thanks for taking my call. Quick question. I'd like to put my house on the market. And how are things looking for that at this time?
Well, buyers are having a tough time getting mortgages because rates are up, and that means monthly payments are up. But there's still a lack of housing stock on the market. I think right now we're having a dip in mortgage rates, despite all this headline news about the Fed's going to raise rates. So
yeah,
it depends. Yeah, it depends on where you are and what's going on in your neighborhood. If you know what you're going to do, are you buying another house with the proceeds, or are you just putting it in the bank?
Putting it in the bank.
Where are you going to live?
With the girlfriend. She's got a place.
Ah, so you got a house you can put on the market. What neighborhood? Where in Chicagoland?
Northwest side.
Northwest
Chicago.
Side? Chicago. Of the city.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I would suggest that once you made the decision to sell it, you might as well list it. Worst comes to worst, you put a price on it that no one buys, and you have to cut it. But right now, people are not cutting prices yet. There is still a great demand. We'll probably get another round of property tax increases in Chicago, which is a negative for housing prices. So you might as well do it now and put the money in the bank. I mean, I don't know why things would get a lot better in housing unless rates came down a lot. And I don't know why rates would come down a lot unless we're in a recession and everything slows down.
It matters a little bit, too, the not only neighborhood, but the price point that house is at. What are we looking at here? 3, 4, 5? What's your number here, Frank?
3, yeah.
In the threes?
Yes.
That's pretty attractive price point generally these days, Terry, isn't it? I mean,
well, it's a lot of first-time home buyers who now may need more money to qualify, may need a larger... There's only one way is to test the market. Get a realtor who's doing business in your neighborhood, ask one or two what price they'd list it at, and take your chances. You know, there's an old saying in the markets, pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered. I think I've mentioned pigs twice this show, but pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered. If you know you're going to sell, you know what the plan is. Oh, by the way, if you will leave the producer your mailing address, okay, Frank, I'm going to send you a copy of a book I wrote 3 years ago called The New Love Deal, Everything You Must Know Before Marrying, Moving In, or Moving On. I co-wrote it with famed divorce attorney Gemma Allen and former divorce court judge Michelle Lawrence. We had a great time writing this, and you just mentioned you're moving in with your girlfriend, and I want you to get this. I will have this book sent to you, and make sure you get it before you sell your house.
And I'm going to send a copy to her, too, by the way. Just
you know, I'm going to give me your name, her name, and I'll dedicate it to both of you. Okay, so talk
Frank
to our
on
producer.
Line one. Good. What a nice gesture on Terry's part. And we're out of time, Terry.
Oh, no. Oh. Okay. Well, the market's not out of time, so let's talk next week.
That's Terry Savage at terrysavage.com. And hold the line, Frank, and we'll set you up. 12:46 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news. Here is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Auto insurance rates for Illinois customers of GEICO are jumping dramatically. For longtime customers, the rate hike is 17%, and for those who signed up within the past 2 years, the hike is 34%. Cranes reports it may be the largest one-time increase for auto insurance ever for a major carrier in Illinois. GEICO casualty premiums will go up $470 a year or $39 a month at the next renewal. GEICO's secure premiums will go up $508 annually on average or about $42 per month. The increases start in August. A new list of the world's best cities is out, and Chicago ranks second. Time Out's list includes the 53 best cities. Edinburgh, Scotland ranks number one, followed by Chicago, the only U.S. city that made the top 10. The list is based on poll responses from readers around the world, along with input from contributors and experts. According to the poll, 55% of Chicago readers also describe residents here as resilient. Chicago came out on top as the funnest city as well, thanks to its vibrant nightlife, unique neighborhoods, and access to Lake Michigan. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
With the business of food, here's Steve Alexander.
And we are sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. I came across a release from the United Soybean Board about how soybean oil is being used to make Skecher shoes.
The sole of the shoe is made with soybean oil.
Belinda Currier is with the United Soybean Board. Skechers and Goodyear worked with the soybean folks to replace petroleum oil with soybean oil in the polymer that makes up the sole.
It gives it more pliability, better traction, and it's lightweight.
And with more on the incredible edible and wearable soybean is April Hemis.
Yeah, I'm a farmer from North Central Iowa.
How many acres do you farm, April?
Around 1,000, and it's been in the family 120 years. And what makes me different is I'm the farmer. My husband has a real job in town.
Okay, so let's go through the list of things we use that are made from soy, and we can leave out a couple of the obvious ones like tofu and the soy milk that we put in our lattes and whatnot.
Yeah, well, I always like to think of soybeans as the unicorn of all commodities. You know, it's that elusive thing everybody wants, but it's kind of more like a chameleon. If you want it, We can do it almost. I mean, obviously the big thing is animal feed. The soybean meal goes, almost all of it goes to feed animals. If you like your bacon, you can thank soybean farmers. So it goes into chicken feed, hog feed, turkey feed. And then the oil goes away over half, goes into human use. But also we're finding a lot more uses for the oil. Of course, biofuels, renewable diesel is coming on strong. The brand new things, and it was developed here at Iowa State University, is an additive for asphalt. And they mix it in and it replaces the petroleum chemicals. I just got a pair of Skechers and the soybean oil is in the sole of the Skechers. And that same stuff is used for tires. Truthfully, the list goes on and on. It goes into artificial turf. It's amazing. And there's over 1,000 soy-based products. But those are some of the highlights.
Thank you, April. From the farm to your belly, today is National French Fry Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Jim Dahlke joins us, senior editor at ChicagoInno.com. Hi again. How are you, Jim?
Hey, John, doing well. Thanks for having me.
Catch me up on Tech Week, Tech Chicago Week. What's the latest?
Yeah, Tech Chicago Week. We talked about this a few weeks ago. It's officially underway this week. 3-day event here in the city, really to bring the tech community together. For the first time since the pandemic, there hasn't been a large-scale tech event in the city of Chicago, really, over the last 2.5 years. So this is a group, P33 tech group here in the city, along with World Business Chicago, putting this event on. Governor Pritzker spoke last night. We've got an event going on today highlighting some underrepresented founders in Chicago. And then Thursday is going to be a full day of startup panels and different topics around fintech in Chicago and a bunch of other initiatives here in the city kind of to boost the tech scene. So it's really an initiative by Claude Seamus. He's a director at P33. He really set out to kind of create a South by Southwest for Chicago. So like that event that happens in Austin every year, he kind of wanted to build something similar for Chicago. It's certainly not quite the scale yet, but there's some after parties and some other things to kind of celebrate Chicago's culture as well, in addition to what's happening in the tech and startup landscape. So plenty of programming still today and tomorrow as Tech Week rolls on.
How many folks in town for this?
Yeah, so about 1,500 to 2,000. So like I said, really kind of, you know, the first large-scale tech event that we've really seen in this city since the pandemic. So curious to kind of see how this continues to evolve over time and if we can actually get to that point of where we're having an event like South by Southwest, where it sort of marries the city's tech scene and culture and film and sports and lifestyle.
Right.
So more to come, but interesting to see it get some legs off the ground here today.
Every time I see some people bumping around with same colored lanyards on, I feel good about Chicago, and I'm glad to hear about this. Just give me one other story. What else is on your mind today?
Yeah, so I have a story coming up on ChicagoInno.com shortly about a company that wants to detect oral cancer by testing your saliva. This company is called OrisDx, and they won first place and over $600,000 at the University of Chicago's New Venture Challenge. The NVC was one of the most prominent startup competitions in Chicago. Some very recognizable names have graduated from there, like Grubhub and Foxtrot and Tovala. OrisDx is creating a non-invasive screening tool to help you detect oral head and neck cancer. It's essentially spitting into a vial, and it can determine if the lesions in someone's mouth are cancerous. And so really what they think this device can be is like a color guard for colon cancer, but for head, neck, and oral cancer. So still haven't yet to go to market, but some pretty nice early traction for these guys and a big win at University of Chicago startup competition.
Jim Dahlke, senior editor, ChicagoInno.com. Really interesting stuff, Jim. Thanks for your time. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, John.